Up next.
If I love myself, what would I do? And because you do that, you know the answer.
So super excited to announce this week's sponsor is Build In Public Fellowship. So Build In Public Fellowship is a 6-week cohort-based course created by KP. So KP is a Building In Public legend on Twitter and podcast host of the Build In Public podcast. And he's hosted some phenomenal people on it, like people like Gary Vee, Alexis Ohanian, just to name a few. And KP has started this fellowship to accelerate the Build In Public journey of ambitious founders and creators. The fellowship comes with strong accountability, supportive community, and hands-on mentorship from KP himself. The fellowship is a global melting pot of members from world-class accelerators like Y Combinator and OnDeck, bootstrap founders with over 20K monthly revenue, professionals from companies like Google and Goldman Sachs, all committed to launching or growing their projects in public. So you'll be surrounded by fellows who've launched a podcast, started and exited multiple companies, built a newsletter or Twitter audience in the hundreds of thousands of people online. We'll have your back as you share your journey and Build In Public fearlessly. So I think this is a no-brainer opportunity for people who want to work with KP and want to learn from KP, and highly recommend it because KP is such an authentic person and he's such a giver and he has so much value to share. And plus, there are also scholarships available too. So the next cohort kicks off on August 7th, but only has limited seats. So please apply ASAP at buildinpublicfellowship.com. Today we're joined by Kamal Ravikant, who's a former founder, younger brother of Naval Ravikant, former CEO of AngelList. So hi, Kamal, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So my first question to you is, so what are the traits of successful founders in your VC portfolio? And could you share a bit more about Evolve VC?
Sure. So Evolve VC was my first VC fund. I started that in 2012. And before that, I was a founder. I never thought of myself as a VC. I always thought like investors were different kind of people. And I was, my thing was to like be an operator. And then in 2011, I had a company that I'd worked on for 3.5 years, built it myself with a team, self-funded for a long time, put everything I had into it, every dollar I had into it, and it was doing really well, took out VC funding, and then imploded, and I lost everything. And so when I came out of that experience, I remember driving my brother, who's the founder of AngelList, and was a very successful angel investor at the time, and now he's a VC at the time as well. And we had gone to see our mother. We were driving back, and I think it was somewhere near Oakland. And I was telling him, like, look, I don't know what I want to do next, because to start a company, you have to want to solve a problem so badly that you just go out and solve it. You know, I really believe that. Like, it's like you're so, that problem keeps you up at night and you want to solve it. And I said, there's no problem I really care about that much to solve a problem, to solve. I'm also pretty burnt out. So I think maybe I'll just join some company and become like VP of something, VP of product, VP of biz dev, VP, or, you know, like the stuff, all the stuff. Once you've been CEO and like been part of long enough, like it's easy to get those positions because you know, you do that stuff very well. And he said, well, look, you're always like getting your friends from outside of Silicon Valley into deals, into great deals. And then you're always helping founders, you know, because you just like doing it. And he said, basically, you're a VC without the carry. He said, why don't you just formalize it? Why don't you go raise a fund and go out to people outside of Silicon Valley and say, like, because, you know, they know you have access. They're like, look, instead of me getting in deals as a friend, just put in my fund and I will just get to the very best deals because I have access. And then says, basically, you're going to continue doing what you do, but now you've formalized it. And so, like, when you help a founder, you also invest in them. This way you get a piece of the upside. And that's how you make money. And I thought about it, and I realized there was a problem I wanted to solve, which is I found, you know, as a founder, I had some great VCs. I also had some, you know, great investors and some, like, not so great investors. And the great investors were ones who did practical help. And very few investors actually give practical help. Especially as a CEO, I wanted someone who would actually do sales for me, bring me customers, who would actually, like, make things happen. And so I thought, what if I create a fund and but be that kind of VC? And so I set out to do that. That was Evolve VC. Actually, my brother came up with that name because, you know, I'm a big believer in personal evolution, you know, all of us growing, all of us being better. And so I went out to my network and raised a small friends and family fund. And that was my MVP and started investing. And that fund has done very well. And so now I have a new fund for the last few years called to come out. It's basically Evolve VC 2. You know, if you go to evolve.vc, it'll redirect to the fund. I use the rolling AngelList rolling fund platform, which I love. As a VC, you don't have to do all the back office and anything like that. The rolling fund platform does all for you, and it's a quarterly fund. People invest every quarter, and so now I have that. And so, you know, in most aspects, Evolve VC 2, and it's a lot of fun. So that's Evolve VC. As far as what makes to paraphrase your question, what makes a great founder? So I look back at, you know, now I've been doing this for professionally since 2012, so over 13 years. And I've had exits and I've had some companies that didn't work out and looked at what is the commonality between the hits and the great entrepreneurs, because that's long enough in this game that you've passed on deals, you've taken deals, that you start to see the patterns. And then literally what everybody talks about, there's nothing special there. The great founder is the one who is totally driven, obsessed to solve this problem, and is also uniquely qualified to solve a problem, and will do it whether you mess them up or not. And every time I back founders like that, it has done very, very well. It's really that simple. You want someone who really passionately cares, will do it whether there's the money or not, because they can recruit people with their passion, and also they'll be very capable, because great talent will not come to incapable people. So they're able to recruit, and they're able to also inspire, and also just keep going forward. Because entrepreneurship, you know, build a company with like one person, two people, to go on to a company with 100 people, is incredibly hard. You're just solve all your every day. All you're doing is solving problems, and trying to like just get to the next day. We solve like bigger problems, and you learn. You're making mistakes, and every day of learning from your mistakes. It involves a very unique mindset and a unique kind of person to do this successfully. So I think that's what it takes. Someone who deeply cares and is uniquely qualified to solve it.
So, firstly, congrats on this all the success that you've had with Evolve VC, and also the success that you've had as a writer and your best-selling author. So, I wanted to dive deep now into what was the influence of your mother on your life and you on your brother's life, and could you share a bit about like how did that shape your worldview and stuff like that?
That's a actually beautiful question. You know, most people don't ask about one's mothers. You know, and my mother had a huge influence on my brother. Like, you know, she divorced my mother when we were young and took us. My father was a troubled man. He was, you know, abusive man, and she took us and raised us on nothing. She worked all day, you know, long days of making minimum wage, and raised us literally on nothing, living in, you know, really crappy apartments outside New York City, and her two boys. And you know, I got to see from watching her the power of a woman, what a woman will do for her children, you know, like the strength of a woman. And it gave me a remarkable respect for women in that way. You know, like I really got to see firsthand. And also, I mean, you know, she taught by love, and she taught us by example. You know, she raised two very, very stubborn, hard-headed boys. So, like, you know, I'm impressed. But she's just very loving and very kind and very sweet, and she did it by example.
That's so great to hear how your mother had such an impact on your life. And so my next question is actually a question from Kamna, who's one of the audience members on Twitter. And she asks, how do you show up with self-love on your worst days? And I think this question really resonates with me as well, because I've also struggled for years with self-love and feeling unaccepted in society and stuff like that. So could you share a bit on that?
Sure. Now that's actually a fantastic question. You know, the whole self-love thing, I was never someone who ever focused on it. Like, I would like anybody else. I had plenty of bad thoughts and whatever about myself. In fact, probably probably maybe more than others. And it took me my life to fall apart for me to actually decide I was going to work on myself by loving myself and then figuring out how to did it. And I realized this whole thing, all of life, is an inner game. Because if you work on the inner self, it makes the outer self work. But if the inner self doesn't work, the outer self usually is not very beautiful. Because look, we're stuck in our heads. We're stuck in our heads and hearts toward the moment we want to the moment we die. And that is one thing that affects the quality of life most is the quality of our mind, the quality of our thoughts. So if you're looking at it that way, what I decided was even when I was hating myself, and I was at the time hating myself, I taught myself to love myself. And I realized self-love is nothing like, has nothing to do with what the world presents. It has nothing to do with what life is. It's nothing to do with who's in my life or who's not in my life. Self-love is just something I choose to give myself because I need it. I give it to myself. And so what I realized, I came up with this internal inner practice, which is what ended the book ended up being about, that I do. That is actually, it's like a practice, like going to the gym. It's like no matter what, you go work out. If you want to be in shape, excuse me, that's my dog, sorry. If you want to work on your outer self, your body, you go and put in the time. You go work out at the gym. It's the same thing with the inner work, like meditation, right? It's the inner work. And that's all self-love is. It's nothing that one has to sit there and feel worthy. One doesn't have to feel worthy. One doesn't have to feel deserving. One doesn't need one single person on the planet to love them, to feel self-love. They have to make that decision and give it to themselves because we all are craving it. And you know what? Selfishly, it makes you so much better. So worst days or best days don't matter. It's like whether you're having a worst day or best day, if you're committed to getting in shape, you will go to the gym and you'll work out or you'll eat healthy. That's all it is. It's just a practice. It's just a commitment. It's very, very simple, actually. And it's not dependent on anybody else but ourselves, for ourselves, whether we're in a deserted island or whether we're in a crowded city. It's just for us.
So that was really deep and very insightful. And so my next question is, so you'd mentioned a bit about your book, but I wanted to dive deep into what was Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It book about? And could you share anything on the for the audience on any takeaways that you had while writing this book?
Remember when I told you about when my company fell apart, lost everything? Well, I kind of fell apart with it. And that's when one day I was so miserable that I just got up and thought, I can't live like this anymore. I'm sick of being in this head. I'm going to get out of this or die trying. I was in a very bad state. And I walked over to my journal and I wrote myself a vow. And I'm a big believer in the power of personal commitment. I think that it's a sacred act when you commit to yourself. Because between you and whatever you believe in, and a vow is truly sacred, like it's between you and life or God or whatever you believe. And I wrote myself a vow, and I was going to write myself a vow, like something like, that I'm going to get better, this or that. And I don't know where it came from, but the vow actually came out to be about loving myself. And I remember when I finished writing it, and I sat back and I thought, what have I done? What have I written? Because I know nothing about this. So then I actually, because I made a vow, set out to actually do it. And it was just me working on my head, trying all these things that worked or didn't work. And whatever worked, I went deeper and deeper and I continued doing it. And within like a month, my head was a completely different place to be in. And what was interesting was my life started shifting around me. It's almost like, there's a phrase, as within, so without. And I really come to believe that the more you, our external life reflects our inner life. So it's selfishly and not. We have to work on the inner self. And also, your worst case scenario is you just end up feeling really good about yourself. That's not a bad thing. We all deserve it. And so I'd also trained to be a fiction writer. So I knew I wanted to write the great American novel. I trained for a decade, while I was building companies. And so I had the craft of writing. I knew how to tell stories. I knew how to write really well. So I promised a friend that I would do it, and I ended up writing a book and putting it out to the world. And I was terrified. I thought everyone I was going to be a laughing stock. Instead, the book took off and took off, became a phenomenon. And you'd be amazed how many the kind of people I've run into who've told me this book has helped them. I'm talking CEOs of Fortune 50 companies. I'm talking, I get emails from 16-year-old girl in Ukraine, like it's just amazing the people who reach out to me and tell me how this has affected them. So that was the book. And the book, I think, is successful and really connects because it's not just fluff. It's not just saying go love yourself or why you should love yourself. Well, everyone, your mother can tell you that, but what makes the book different is that it's practical. It's an inner thing, step by step. So it went down to the point of little things like, when I was having to make choices, hey, sorry, my dog wants to play. When I had to make choices, there's a simple question I ask myself, and it becomes a habit over time. The question starts with if, and the if is very important. If I love myself truly and deeply, what would I do? Because if I say, because I love myself, or I love myself truly and deeply, what will I do? The mind rebels. The mind can say, well, you don't, or you shouldn't, or you don't deserve it, whatever. So it's a theoretical question. If anyone can say, if I love myself, what would I do? And because you do that, you know the answer. Every time you have a choice, if you can make the practice during the days, like when you have to make choices, and the choices can be as simple as, how am I going to respond to someone being mean to me, angry to me? If I love myself, what would I do? I would actually be more loving to myself. Or if I'm wanting, trying to lose weight or be healthy, if I love, and I have food in front of me, if I love myself, what would I do? Would I eat this or not? It's a very, very simple thing, but what you start doing is making actual loving choices for yourself. And you know what? No one, you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen to the answer. But if you start asking this question, eventually you will feel the pressure of yourself and you will start to listen to the answer. It's a very practical, very simple, and very powerful question. And anyone can walk away and apply it daily. And trust me, it will have an effect on your life.
That was a really great question that you shared. And so my next question is, so what was your experience of meditating with monks, and how did that kind of shape your worldview, and what did you learn from that?
Okay, so 2019, I've actually gone and spent some time in Dharamsala when I was 25. So that was a long time ago, and meditated with monks over there. But also in 2019, I went and studied with the Bon in Mustang Valley in Nepal. And the Bon are the mystics of Tibetan Buddhism. And their whole practice is, and I'm very lucky that I was one of the first few Westerners that they actually taught their awakening practices to. And I got to experience, taste a little bit of it, like their whole point is to get you to like awaken in this lifetime, not over several lifetimes. And they've been around since longer than Tibetan Buddhism, and they were incorporating Tibetan Buddhism, and now they're the mystics. And the mystics are always about, in any culture, any religion, are about direct experience with reality, not going through intermediaries, They don't go through priests or whatever. They want to experience the whole thing themselves. And it was very interesting, the level of dedication that they have. They will literally go and spend a couple of years in caves in a hill, not a hillside, in the edge of a cliff out of Mustang Valley. And out there, it looks like I've been there. I've been to see some of those caves. It's literally like you're on the surface of Mars. There's nothing, no vegetation, no nothing. It's so desolate. You might as well be just like when you see photos of planets from far away, how desolate they look. That's what it looks like. And they go there and they just face themselves. And, we're doing these practices to awaken. And the level of commitment they have to do that is just purely just to awaken, just to free the mind, to free their mind. And because they believe me, they free their mind, they free others too. And it was so inspiring as I think of it. And actually, thank you for asking me, because I'd actually forgotten how inspiring it was. We get lost in our lives. We learn lessons, then we go on, we forget. But the level of commitment, like for example, there was we were doing a tour of these caves, and our teacher, he was showing me this cave, and inside this cave, and we're talking, like I said, like on the surface of Mars, and so deep inside this cave was a small wooden door. And there was also a little stovepipe, like leading under, like just outside the door. So I asked, what is that? He's like, okay, that's actually a cave within a cave, and they put a door in there. So he says, some of us, we will actually go inside there. We'll lock the door from inside or outside, I don't remember, and stay in there for like months. Cave within a cave, not and someone will come by once or twice a week in the stovepipe, they'll put some food in and it comes right in. So no human contact, no light, no nothing, a cave within a cave on literally the surface of Mars. And he said even the some but he said even some of the best trained of us actually go crazy and say crazy, you know, it can drive you crazy. And then he casually mentioned we were walking and talking, and he said, you know, like I'm training to go do that. And I looked at me, and me, I looked at him and I said, why? And he looked me straight in the eyes and he said, because dreams are an illusion and reality is an illusion and I want to break free. He just looked me, I mean, it was straight in the eye, straight conviction. He knew what he was about and what he was going to do. I mean, think about that, right? How often in our lives do we have that kind of conviction about anything? Imagine what we can do in our life if we have that kind of conviction. We can literally transform ourselves, we can transform the world as well. Yeah.
That was extremely deep, and yeah, I love the way that you explained the story and how you experienced so much in just by meditating with monks. And this concept of high conviction, I think, was my biggest takeaway. So my last question to you is, so what is something that you look for in the founders that you back as an angel investor?
Well, I'm a VC now. I have a VC fund. Angel investor would be with my own money. VC, like I have my own money in the fund, but also a lot of investors in the fund. So what do I look? Actually, founders with conviction. You know, you're not gonna, it's very rare. Like, it's very rare you find that level of conviction, but you find founders who are driven. You know, like the worst ones to find are the ones. Whatever is the hot space, all of a sudden they're starting a company in that space because it's hot and they just want to see if they can quickly make an easy buck. Because hot spaces don't last, one. Second, it'll be hard times. And if you're in it just to make an easy buck, some of you will get lucky, but most of you will not succeed because you're in the hard times. You won't care enough. You won't have the conviction to keep going. And I don't, you know, as a VC, I mean, in the end, you get lucky. But with the returns, but you're looking, you increase your luck by going after great founders, by investing in great founders. And for example, there's a founder I'm about to invest in. He actually built another company beforehand. I was involved with that company, exited, and but he realized he sold it too quickly, and the PE firm that bought it basically rode it into the ground. So now he's actually found a bigger problem he wants to solve, what he really cares about. He could end up doing this, end up working on this for the rest of his life. He's so committed. He was a big Bitcoiner, ended up selling a lot of his Bitcoin in the last couple of years to fund it. And it's finally figure out the model. You know, Bitcoiners do not part with their Bitcoin. You know, and like that, he basically like in the I was blown away the way he did that and to solve this problem. And he is working hard. He's finally figured it out and he's solving it. And literally, I was like, well, dude, what will happen if no one invests? He's like, I'll sell off all my Bitcoin. If I have to drive an Uber, I'll drive an Uber, but I'm going to make this work. That's the founder you back. You know, those are the kind of people. Also, if it doesn't work, look, a lot of companies don't work. You know, it's okay. That's the whole entrepreneurship game. But you never regret backing a founder like that. You want to help people like that succeed. You want to cheer them on. You want to back them. So the worst is when you back someone that you know it was just in it for the money and was just like opportunistic and it failed. You really feel like, damn, I basically, you know, like I wasted my money. So strong conviction, but like they show it. It's not they talk about it, but look at this guy, a Bitcoiner selling a good thing of his Bitcoin, spending 2 years working to solve this problem to figure it out.
I think that was a great way to end it, just to tie it in with both the previous and this thing. And yeah, high conviction is definitely something that more VC should look at when they're backing founders. And So yeah, it was an absolute pleasure and an honor to host you on the podcast today. So thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your experiences and sharing your insights.
Thank you. And look, you're very persistent, you know, and that's actually, funny enough, that's also another thing. You're looking at great founders, and they're very persistent. They don't give up. You've been chasing me to be on your podcast for a long time. So, you know, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And just a quick one. So how can the audience reach you, and like, where can they connect with you?
Well, for my fund, it's evolve.vc. That'll redirect to where my fund info is. Personal, I'm on Instagram, Twitter. My books are bookstores all over the world, or Amazon. You know, just my name.